The Ric Flair Show.
My name's Ric Flair.
Woo! Woo! To be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo! Right here, I'm the man.
Woo! The 16-time world champion.
Woo! Back behind the mic and telling it like it is.
Woo!
If you're not carrying the big gold, you're second best no matter what you tell yourself. I'm the best. Y'all playing catch up ball. To the Nature Boy.
And now, your hosts of the Ric Flair Show, Ric Flair and Conrad Thompson.
Woo!
Hey, this is the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Welcoming everyone to the Ric Flair Show, along with my phenomenal co-host, the legendary Conrad Thompson. And we are actually live in the studio of the Conradison.
Woo!
Man, we're excited to be back. And let's get right into it, Ric.
And our guest today couldn't be more highly thought of by me and a number of people in the industry. His dad and I were great friends. It's just been in the last year, last couple of weeks, that we celebrated the anniversary of his passing. But, ladies and gentlemen, today, hello, man.
What's going on?
Cody Rhodes.
Oh, hey. How apropos that I get to be on this podcast with you and Conrad. It's Rhodes and Flair all over again.
I love it.
Well, you know, it's funny. I know I showed you this, but our first guest on our first podcast was supposed to be your dad.
Yep.
On our first original, and not knowing that he had health issues, we missed each other by a day. And he had...
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I still have the text. I saved him. I think I showed him to, I showed him to you. I for sure showed him to your mom, of me and him going back and forth on doing the first show. So it's always a great memory. I'll never erase him. I got him here forever.
Yeah, I got the same thing. I have the last few voicemails that he left me and the last few text messages that he left me. He was very phone illiterate, and so they don't necessarily make much sense, but I know what they mean, so yeah. I always keep them with me too.
Well, I told Conrad yesterday, and I think I probably have told him 100 times, but the speech or whatever the word would be that you gave at the funeral was one of the most touching things I've ever heard in my life. It was awesome, and the line about your mom and why would you have any pictures in the house of any other wrestlers when you're married to Elvis. I like that. That was pretty good.
I heard her say it herself when I asked her. I said, you know, because I wanted, it was something for a school project. I wanted, where's some pictures of me and Flair? Where's some pictures of me and Sting? I know there was a picture of me and Muda. I mean, I asked about these pictures, and she said it, and she walked away, too. She ended on the clever line. She said, when you're married to Elvis, you don't take pictures with the band. And
wow.
I could never.
I never thought of myself being part of the band.
No. I
didn't mind taking the big elbow, but I wasn't in the band.
I don't think you were in the band either. I think it was her blanket statement.
Listen, all the horsemen were in the band. What a great time, man. Go ahead, Conrad. I know you got 1,000 questions.
Well, I'm just curious, you know, what was your first memory of meeting Ric? I know that, you know, you probably met him as a little kid, and it's kind of weird or kind of cool to see how that relationship has blossomed in time, but what was your first memory of Ric? Was it on TV, or did you meet him in real life?
Great question. I want to say it was likely my perception and opinion was shaped from TV. Now, I don't think a lot of people know this. My dad did not smarten me up to professional wrestling. At no juncture. I think his strategy was he'll figure out some things about it as we go, which actually is a pretty horrible strategy when your father is often getting beat up, when he's laid bloody in the ring. So early on in my career, Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen were the big bad. I mean, I thought Ric Flair and I thought Tully Blanchard were the worst, just gangster-like people on the planet. So when he would bring me to these events and I'd meet them for the first time and I'd see these interactions between them, I'll never forget. I one time was like real nervous when Rick came around and he told me afterwards, and this doesn't help with the whole not smartening me up thing either. He told me, he goes, oh, well, you know, out there it's a different situation. Back here we respect one another, which still didn't fully explain to me how any of this was going on. So I was actually pretty terrified of, well, of Ric Flair as a child. And my sister, she's like she's the stronger of the two. My sister really always had it out for Rick. Always. I think my sister's like 20.
Well, you and Teal were both born in Charlotte, right?
Yes, sir. Presbyterian Hospital.
Yeah, see, that's both where Ashley and Reed were born as well. Oh. So I saw them a lot. Dusty and I lived basically across the street from each other, two separate subdivisions, and we saw them a lot. And when we got together for, like, the Lakers and the Celtics, and because he was a Celtic, I was a Laker.
Right.
He was a Bronco, I was the Giants, you know, which we'd get together for the big games and have a great time. But now I saw him grow, but then he moved to Atlanta, and I hadn't seen Cody in years, but Cody was an amateur wrestler, two-time state champion, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I heard he was down there wrestling, they were the same weight class, right, but a different age group. So I brought
Cody and Reed.
So I started coming down to Atlanta, but they never got together. Because they were always in a different. It was like you're like 2 years older than Reed, I think, right? What, are you 29?
I'm 31 now. I just turned 31.
You're 31.
I'm 31 years old.
Holy cow!
I know, right?
Holy cow! When's your birthday?
As of June 30th. That was my birthday.
Well, congratulations. You know what they told me when I first started in the business after hanging around your dad Murdoch for a while, that if I lived to be 30, I'd be overstaying my welcome.
Ooh.
Let me tell you, running around with your dad and Murdoch in 1972 wasn't good for my marriage. It certainly wasn't good for my health. Good Lord.
You guys had a good time.
Oh,
I remember.
My God. Jesus Christ. Did we have fun? I used to drive him to the towns I wasn't even booked. I didn't come home for a week at a time.
He told me a story about in Japan.
Yeah.
Where they carried
their bags for 3 weeks.
Yep.
Yep. They destroyed my room with a fire extinguisher, threw all my shit, all my clothes, out of the second story window, onto the street. They brutalized me.
And
I would sit on a train, and your dad would sing, because I was so homesick, "Dear John, I hate to write you, good Lord."
Oh,
there was no cell phones back then, right? You know, so I didn't know what Leslie was doing. And then the worst thing they did is we're coming back, and we got so drunk on Northwest. We landed in Honolulu. This is how drunk we were. They arrested Buddy Wolf, the FBI, when he got off the plane. Me and your dad and Murdoch went down to the beach, and whatever they did to me, I was supposed to pick up Leslie at 8 o'clock at night. They were on a 6 o'clock flight, right? I woke up at 9 o'clock laying on the beach, right?
Wow.
I'm not, Leslie's been at the airport for an hour, right? It was nice. Thanks, Dream.
Hey, I was going to mention, I remember... I remember my dad always kind of, I think you and him both were searching for each other at some of those amateur wrestling tournaments. Cause I remember he used to bring it up to me and I thought like, that's a lot of pressure, you know, cause I didn't really come into my own amateur wrestling wise until high school. I was not very good at the junior level.
Yeah.
Didn't have any upper body strength. I didn't have any technique. And, I remember you guys were kind of like, it was like the rivalry.
Oh, yeah, it was a family tradition, brother. We were going to find out. That would have been insanity, but it never happened, man. Yeah. It wasn't because I didn't drive.
Well, you remember some of those more I hate saying it, but, you know, Georgia and there in the South, some of those more hillbilly parents.
Yeah.
Man. When they'd wrestle, I'm sure it was the same with Reed. When they'd wrestle me, they'd treat it like they were wrestling Dusty Rhodes himself.
Are you kidding? That's what Reed went through every weekend.
They have
300 kids around the mat hollering and screaming. I was, of course, a bad guy anyway. At least your dad was portrayed as a good guy. But they were dying to beat Reed. Unreal.
They hated it. Yeah, it was almost like, here you are, you're this little kid, you know, you're, I mean, little kid, like, I think I started when I was 9, and they're all around the mats, and these parents, none of the other matches yeah. are being watched at this tournament, and it's like everybody was rooting against you, and I'm thinking, hey, I don't have anything to do with this, you know, I remember, that's why I'm almost, yeah, no, I'm definitely glad Reed and I never crossed paths, because I think that would have torn the joint down. It would have been the end of the tournament.
I know. Well, you know, the thing of it is, it's probably better it didn't happen, but me and your dad, though, you know, we were doing it, man. We'd sit and talk, and I'd watch you, and he'd watch Reed, and you and Reed actually got to know each other pretty well then.
Yeah.
And you guys got to visit between matches. Now, that was a great time, and to me, if you look at it like this, and you can have that opportunity to go on, I mean, it's kind of like what you've gone through in your lifetime, being the son of the legendary Dusty Rhodes, is a lot what Ashley and Reed have had to go through. And, you know, like Ashley got there, and, you know, she it's just in the next week that she will have been in the business 4 years.
Wow.
And it's funny because I don't discuss this a lot, but the opportunity, Ashley never wrestled as an independent, and the resentment against her because she wasn't an indie wrestler.
Right.
It just caught me off guard. I go, what do you mean? They're mad at me. They don't like me because I never wrestled the indies. I said, well, the answer to that is, because, you know, she did promo classes with Dusty. The answer to that is that, by the way, I had a Division I scholarship, but I went to college. I'm sorry you guys didn't. But she was too shy to say that. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Sorry I got recruited by 90 schools and decided to go to school and get a degree. I'm sorry, you idiots.
Well,
but it's ridiculous. The resentment, it was terrible for her.
But take a look at the current landscape with her walking out at WrestleMania and, you know, as champion. Yeah. That's one of those things. The perception, you know, it is a little frustrating when the perception is that if you were on the independents, you're automatically very good. Now, there's a ton of guys who came from the independents who are just excellent. But it's very similar when I started. Everyone wanted to kind of rewrite history. And, I mean, I was a referee for my dad when I was 15 years old for his independent promotion. And I've been around the sport of professional wrestling since my earliest memory. That's what we talked about. So it was weird to see, like, that experience, which is a different type of experience, get kind of discredited because I had never wrestled an independent match. So because that's the reality. Tommy Dreamer sent me right to OVW. He didn't tell me to wait a year. He didn't even tell me he didn't give me anything other than you're going to love it here, and you're going to be safe here, and you're going to learn here. And yeah, no, I know all about that.
Yeah, no, it's funny because, you know, so Dreamer is the way you got to OVW.
So I, basically here's what happened. I had a good little run, with amateur wrestling, and I got recruited by a couple schools, one of them being Penn State, and I
the Mecca right now.
Oh,
they're the number one program in the country with that kid that moved there from the kid from Iowa State. What's his name?
Yep. What is his name?
The guy that broke Dan Gable's records. It doesn't matter.
They're drawing.
Yeah, huge.
They're drawing big houses for dual meets and stuff like that. So I got recruited, and my SAT score needed to get raised, but they seemed pretty locked in for some sort of scholarship. And I had reached the point where I did not think I was going to be able to succeed at a college level. I really didn't have any interest in going to college. What I wanted to do was I wanted to be an actor. And the reason I wanted to be an actor is because I thought I was not physically big enough to be in dad's business. I just thought I wasn't, which is weird, but I thought I wasn't. So I, as soon as high school was over, as soon as the summer started, me and Teal packed up a car to the brim, Volkswagen Jetta, drove across the country, and I got an apartment in Los Angeles. And that whole time I was out there, I was watching, well, Randy Orton on TV and some of this great stuff. And I kind of realized that I was thinking about wrestling way more than I was thinking about acting. I had a great acting coach out there, and he ended up coming to the Performance Center, and he's worked with Ashley, actually. So it was a great contact to have. But after about 10 months, I thought, what the hell are you doing? So had him write me a letter of recommendation because I was a stage manager. And
it was in the blood, man.
I met with John Laurinaitis.
it was in the blood, meant to be.
Yeah, so, I couldn't.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Yep.
No, I just couldn't run. I couldn't run from it. I met with John Laurinaitis at the Marriott, the Marriott, the one you guys would quite often reference.
Are you talking about on Riverdale Road?
On Riverdale Road, the very that.
Oh
that
my
very
God,
one.
That place!
That's where the mayor.
That's where the chicks could stop by and on their way to Disney World and ride Space Mountain before they got to Florida
for free.
For free,
Jesus. Jesus. But yeah, no, I met him. I met Dean Malenko. Dean Malenko gave me some of the best advice of my night of my life that night. Told me, don't do anything like your dad, you know, don't bleach your hair blonde. Don't do the jabs and don't do the elbow. Don't go by the Rhodes name just yet. Go to OVW and try to carve out your own niche. And then Tommy called me, and Tommy sent me there to Louisville. I had a great time. I actually was looking this morning at some Kurt Angle stuff because I was so disappointed that when I got to WWE in 2007, when I debuted on Raw, he was just on his way out. So we were like ships in the night. I'm thrilled, but also pretty nervous for that whole weekend.
Hey,
with
let me tell you something. The best story I have about Kurt Angle is I had to wrestle him just like I had to wrestle Brock, right? So
yeah,
I get a text from Michael Hayes. Hey, Raw Monday in L.A. Was either L.A. or Phoenix or Vegas, something like that. You know, I think it was L.A. You're wrestling Angle. I go, okay, cool. I got, 3 minutes? 18 minutes. I go, you got to be kidding. I'm not ready for that. I mean, give me a break, right? So, but this is how good Kurt is. So, he was trying to lead me, which never works. I got to lead or I'm not. So, I know what I'm capable of doing. And wrestling him at the age of 55 was not me like wrestling him at 35. So
right.
He didn't like me leading, but it turned out good. But I was so blown up that I had him give me the belly to back, pick up the thing, the mat, right, and give me the belly to back on a cement. That's how good he is, right? I never even felt it. I felt 10 times worse, right? And I stayed out there for about 2 minutes catching my breath. The referee kept saying, you okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine. just start counting and break it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's the best. I mean, you don't even know with Kurt. I mean, and the thing of it is, you've ever seen him do that moonsault off the big cage?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, the guy can do anything. Yeah, he's one of my favorite people. I love him to death. But, man, he is a primo performer in the ring. Great guy.
So Cody, let's address the internet rumor that has Reddit going wild that this is all a big elaborate hoax between Cody Rhodes and Triple H, and it's just an angle to get rid of Stardust, and Cody Rhodes will be back after he drums up some internet buzz on the indies and then makes his triumphant return to WWE.
I can tell you 100% that WWE and myself have gone separate ways. I saw even there was a rumor about like a merchandising contract. And that I think that might have stemmed from the fact that the only discussion post WWE was about my dad's book. And it was very important to me that they granted me the rights to write his book before I left, but it was important. You know, I knew that was one of the big risks I was taking with leaving as well. They may take the book away from me. They did not. I'm still writing Dusty Rhodes, Wrestling Glass Cowboy, and I'm excited at the progress it's taking. I didn't want anyone else to write it. Dusty was, he was my best friend. We were very close. And everybody knows that. And I've tried to kind of do justice to his legacy, as has WWE. Triple H rolled out a hell of a series of things. The statue, the tournament.
Oh my God! Hey, not to jump in on you, but I talked about it this year at the Hall of Fame, if you remember correctly.
Yes, sir.
I thanked the company. What they did and I mean, which was appropriate. It wasn't like I was, it wasn't unexpected. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But they
honored his memory.
Honored his memory, and they put it in a position where it'll be there forever, and everybody, it's just one of those special things, and they did pretty well, pretty damn near the same thing for Roddy on a smaller scale because of the fact that the funeral was, you know, outside of Portland, Oregon, impossible to get to, but, and they didn't have the relationship quite with Roddy that they had with your dad, so your dad was, you know, currently working at NXT and all that, and just really part of the family and such a contribution, but boy, I tell you, here's how sad it was. I was getting on a plane. I was so excited to go see the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 6.
Right.
And
of course you were. You tweet about it.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about last year.
Well, you were tweeting too.
I know, but
too.
I feel like when I follow you, most of your tweets are about the Cavs.
Of course they are, yeah. Well, I don't know what it is. I must have a man crush on LeBron or something, but I'm ashamed to admit it. Anyway, I like him almost as much as I liked your dad back in 72. That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sitting to get on a plane with Wendy, and I get a call from Hunter. He said, hey, the dream went. I said, what? I mean, I almost fell over. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
That, I had just been with him.
A couple days before.
I had just been with him on Tuesday, and he was so pissed that I was getting to go to the game. I was down there visiting Ashley and went by the Performance Center. And he was so pissed that I was going to go to the game because we've always jealous about sports. And then I got the call. And then,
he went to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you had seen him a few days before. He went to work the day before.
No, I know. I was in the office with him. We were bullshitting about it. Because Bret Hart had paid you this awesome compliment. I think I told you the story.
Yes.
Brett had said to me, he said, we had him on the podcast.
Right.
And Brett said that he thought that it was that the company didn't handle you and promote you the right way. He liked somebody else, too, that was it.
He really put over Cody and thought Cody was one of the best performers on the roster.
Oh, he did for sure, yeah. And your dad was pretty happy to hear that. So, I am positive. It's hard for you to see that right now, but this little break from TV, it's funny. I took the year off because I thought when the company got bought by WWE that I was on my way. They called me and said, you want to come? I said, hell, I didn't hear from them for a year.
Right.
So, but it gave me a break from everything. I was so stale from WCW and the nightmare of working there. And I was so happy to close down. But when I came back, I mean, and you know they're going to reach out to you. And it'll all work out. You'll be back doing it again. And at 31, I mean, you got so much ahead of you. You've been pretty much injury-free. That's the only thing you got to be careful of in the independent stuff. Don't be doing that moonsault off the cage or anything, okay? Lombardi's a good guy, but he's not going to pay you for your health insurance, okay?
I think I kind of retired the moonsault.
When I saw you do that, I almost came out of my – when I saw you do that, I almost came out of the chair. It was against – you were wrestling against Road Dog and
that one kind of goes bad because
see what a memory I've got. I can even tell you who you're working with.
That one goes bad because he didn't really have much choice and my knee would have come down right on his head and I was cockeyed and I went to the middle, not the corner. It was funny because I was so confident from the one I'd done with Cesaro in Madison Square Garden where I rolled right into the pin. 1, 2, 3, and the people came alive for it. So I thought, oh, well, it's TV. And I also have a fear of heights. So as soon as I set my feet, that's kind of my rule. I look down at my feet and go. But after that one, because I slightly tore my MCL, slight tear, just where it was a little wobbly, and I had a brace for a little while. But after that one, I thought, maybe I'll put this away.
It's funny. I knew you were a hell of an athlete, but I didn't know you could do that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Because I had seen you work 100 times, but I never saw you do anything like that. It's kind of like that's why Ashley is whatever they want to say about Ashley, she's the best athlete on the roster. She can do anything. That moonsault at WrestleMania pretty much summed it all up, right? I mean,
picture perfect.
Yeah,
I mean, and she can do anything.
And that's the goal. By the end of the night, I want them to know, like, that the pro wrestling I take very seriously, and if you paid for a ticket, I want you to get more than your money's worth.
Well, that's that. You just said the key words. That was our motto. We unfortunately we had so much fun, but we took a lot of pride in delivering a product that people paid.
Oh yeah,
and that's why. Oh. That's why if it wasn't working in 30 minutes, I was out there for 45. If 45 wasn't working, I was out there for 50. Because I didn't want to let anybody down, and I think that was something that's helped my career along the way. Is people knew that I wasn't going to take a night off if there was 200 or 20,000. So, and that's very important. I mean, to have that much pride in yourself and that much pride in the product. So. Yeah, it worked. I mean, your dad and I, man, who knows? It wouldn't matter, but it was never 200 with me and your dad. Sorry to report to anybody else, but it was never 200. Maybe 10,000 every night.
I watched kind of your series of matches with Dream this past week. I got real retrospective. I think I texted you from my bar.
You sent me one,
I even watched 1981 when your first NWA championship when you take it from the Dream. And then I watched the $1 Million Challenge and the Gathering and then the Bash, you know, because the Bash, I think, is his. When I was a kid, I watched the Bash with him, and I think that's his favorite of all your matches in the cage, small package, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, 30-year anniversary of that coming up, July 13th.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. I go on record as saying, and this is the only thing that, I mean, I've had a lot of beefs with the NWA, but towards the end of it. But to put us in Kansas City where nobody knew us, unless they had a little bit of Atlanta TV, right, and had the switch there in a building that held 3,200 people, instead of having us do it in Florida or Charlotte or somewhere, you know, they wanted to take, of all the places, I mean, and your dad had just gotten it. He didn't want to lose it. Michelle was there. I felt terrible. You know.
Oh, no.
Huh?
Oh, they guilted you.
Well, no, I mean, I felt terrible because your dad didn't want to lose it. And all of a sudden, it just came around. You know, he didn't want to lose it that fast. And
do you think they did it in Kansas City to protect Dusty rather than an area where he was super hot, like in Florida, that maybe he drops it in Kansas City, it didn't hurt him as bad?
I don't know the answer to that, but
it's
a good question. But I, you know, hell, we could go anywhere,
right?
But it should have been someplace where we're both over,
right?
I mean, it could have been Georgia. I mean, it could have been neutral. That'd be North Carolina. It could have been Atlanta, Georgia. It could have been Columbus, Georgia.
And
someplace where they knew us, and we could tear it down. I thought a really unfair scenario that you know, I didn't tell anybody because I was instructed not to, and your dad, of course, brought Michelle, but my mom and dad came. It's one of the few times they saw me wrestle. I didn't take Beth. I didn't tell her.
Wasn't that one of those situations where the vote was like one of those split votes amongst the NWA board?
Five to four.
If you watch that Kansas City match, and to your point exactly, like, had that been the Bayfront Center, had that been, you know, it's very strange.
Well, or Greensboro, put it in neutral territory, put it in Atlanta.
Were you guys as performers privy to what the vote was? Like, did you know ahead of time, or is that something that comes out years later?
No. I knew it. Crockett called me and told me. But I don't think Dusty or myself knew they were having a vote. What happened was that Eddie had so much power, Fritz had so much power, Geigel had a little bit of power, Sam had a ton of power, Barnett had a ton of power, Crockett was pushing for me, Eddie, of course, pushing, and I think because Crockett was getting so big, I mean, all of a sudden it wasn't just Mid-Atlantic. I mean, he was starting to make moves, right, that Crockett pushed them because all those guys resented Jimmy Crockett. I mean, he wasn't a wrestler. They liked his dad, but, you know, Eddie was a former wrestler, Geigel, former wrestler. Barnett, I'm not sure how he got in to begin with, but the Funks, Harley Race, you know what I mean? It's like when when Dusty beat Harley, he beat him in Tampa.
Right.
I mean, Bayfront center, man.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, and it should have been in a, it should have been in a scenario where we both were had some steam. We would have torn it down. I mean, you know, but we're sitting there and they, people are looking at us like, hey, I guess I know Dusty Rhodes. I definitely don't know Ric Flair. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that him winning it in at the Bayfront with Harley, because I'm just now thinking about you at Starrcade 83, and you, I believe it's the exact same, it's the same finish, just a crossbody from the top.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Same finish, Harley, man. Yeah. That one, that had Harley's number, the old crossbody from the top.
Yeah.
That had him.
Well, let me tell you, it didn't have Harley's number, it had his blessing.
Yeah, that works.
Because he could have changed it at any point in time.
That works, man.
I told you my favorite Harley race story, right?
You told me a few Harley race stories on the bus, and every one of them I was.
I told you about the Hunter one and the Kurt Henning one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I knew you were talking about Harley because you always simulated you were yeah, smoking okay. a cigarette to begin.
Yeah. Well, here I'll, for the fans that haven't heard this, this is the first time that Hunter, who came to WCW.
Paul
Levesque, right?
Yeah.
Walked in the locker room, and Harley at that time was managing Vader. So, and Hunter, Paul Hunter had been in the gym business, and I met him at a Gold's Gym convention because I had the 10 Gold's Gyms. I brought the tape back, and bingo, they hired him. So, we're in the locker room, and this kind of, this obviously is not real, but I like to use these voices, okay? I go, Harley, I want you to meet a new guy, Paul Levesque, just coming into business. How do you do, Mr. Race? How you doing, kid?
I'm good.
Who trained you?
Killer Kowalski.
He's the shit.
poor Hunter.
I know. What are you gonna poor say? Hunter. What are you gonna say? And then and then the Kurt Henning one. Kurt Henning in Kansas City, right? Just a new kid starting in Minneapolis, just down there working because Larry and him, right? He goes,
"Hey, Mr. Reese, what's the finish tonight?
What's your finish, kid?"
Drop pick off the top rope.
I'll move. Are you kidding me? Those are the best of all time. Oh. He was so intimidating. Harley, everybody was afraid of Harley. Oh, jeez.
You know, Dusty, you know this, obviously, Rick, but obviously Dad modeled a good deal of his career after Muhammad Ali.
Of course.
Especially with, like, Gordon Solie kind of standing in as his Howard Cosell. He always told me growing up, he referred to Harley Race as the George Foreman.
Yeah.
That was his George Foreman.
Yeah.
I always loved the
good analogy.
The parallel. Yeah, that was his George Foreman.
Yeah, he was the shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny you said that because I thought it was phenomenal, and I'm sure Conrad and I must have talked about it 100 times, for the NBA finals to be going on as strong and as in the ratings that they got for that Friday to completely shut down. And everything for 2 days was committed to Muhammad Ali.
Yep.
Spoke volumes for who this guy was. I mean, it's really unbelievable. And then the minute the funeral was over, back to basketball.
Right.
But for that that 48 hours, man, it was Muhammad Ali. I mean, and they gave him, I mean, the guy was it. I mean, but your dad was the Muhammad Ali in terms of, I mean, all the stuff, the wine and dine, the pork and beans. I mean,
I don't even know
where he got all that shit, but it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it looked
you only passed like through one time, kid. Why not pass by on a Cadillac?
And a Cadillac. It was one of those.
Well, Laura's out back laughing and a joke, and I'm out front cooking and smoking.
He was inspired by it, and he made it. he took it to pro wrestling, especially with with Gordon. And you look at those Gordon and Dusty interviews from Championship Wrestling from Florida. I found one the other day that is likely my favorite Dusty promo, Dusty interview of all time. And it's one that very few people have ever seen. It's about Eric the Red and Sonny King and Pac Song. It's talking about a bounty that Harley Race had, and it's just amazing. But I can see it, especially after digging into, you know, Ali here and there. Man, I can see it. It's fun to see, like, because that's pro wrestling. I always like that, where you can take something from the mainstream and you can mold it to your audience, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, your dad, you know, I'll tell you another guy that your dad got a little bit from with Thunderbolt Patterson. Your dad, your dad was the white Thunderbolt at that time. Thunderbolt could talk, man.
Yeah.
He was average in a ring, but he could talk. But your dad took Thunderbolt's rap and took it to a whole new level. I mean, that thing that your dad, the Hard Times promo that he made about me and that, I mean, that promo may be one of the greatest promos of all time.
Absolutely.
Hard Times.
I love the Hard Times promo, but I have so many more of his.
Yeah,
his promos that I like. I think it's just because I've seen Hard Times. I've seen it so much. I do remember WWE.com did a best talkers list.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad was furious.
That I was ahead of
furious.
Him.
I think he was mad about that. And I think but the thing that really set him off was that Thunderbolt Patterson was not on the list.
Yeah. He was pissed. He sent me a text. You're number one.
No.
That's I said Heyman. I just call Heyman number four now every time I see him.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, but that's elite company to be up there in that top five with.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. No. It's heat, though, man. I just got the vote because I took off my clothes more times than the ring. As Mean Gene would say, here goes the laundry again.
I saw an interview with you the other day where you have these massive shades on.
Yeah, okay.
And this is, I think this is before 1981. I think this is 1980s. And you're talking about the boy. I'm trying to think. It was on the Rivalries. It was on the Rivalry special that they just put out. But it was excellent. It doesn't even sound like
me and your dad?
No, it was pre.
You're in a feud with a black guy.
When you were coming into your own.
Oh, it's Sonny King.
Yeah.
Nah, who is it? Sonny King? You're talking about?
It was Rufus.
Yes.
No, you're talking about Conway. Something Conway.
Tiger Conway.
Tiger. Yeah, you're talking about, and you keep calling him a boy, and you got these big ass.
That stuff wouldn't fly now. No, Jesus.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Are you kidding me? I'm just glad that social media wasn't around back then because you didn't think about it.
Yeah.
And nobody was uncomfortable with it. You know what I mean? Tiger Conway and I were good friends, as were Rufus and I. I'll tell you something that's funny, and I didn't know this. Cody, you were there. Do you realize that I'm drawing a blank. What's the kid's name that inducted Boss Man?
That was his kids,
his
right?
His kids did Boss Man.
No, okay, not Boss Man. Who's Slick?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what Slick is?
Oh,
the manager, Slick, yeah.
You know what Slick is?
Yeah.
Who is it?
I don't know.
It's Rufus R. Jones' son.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that. He inducted Boss Man, didn't he?
You're right.
Yeah.
We were just thinking about, you know, his family accepted.
Yeah, no, Slick is Rufus R. Jones' son, and somebody told me that. Because his dad and I we had great times. I mean, it's unbelievable. The night he challenged Roddy Piper to drink moonshine, and we went to the interviews in the morning, and your dad said, "Where's Rufus?" And we couldn't find him. And they called from the Kentucky Fried Chicken place.
Passed out on the hood, right?
He passed out on the hood of his car. Piper left him for dead. Kentucky Fried Chicken called the office. And go, I think one of your wrestlers is still in the parking lot.
That's hilarious.
Don't mess with Piper. Hey, I have one more question for you. I've never asked you. I asked Teddy a couple times, Senior. What are you guys seemed like the perfect team? What happened with that deal?
With Ted Jr.?
Yeah, do you remember when you and Orton, when me and Orton fought all the way down to the ring, and Orton fed me into you guys, and you guys defended
me? Oh, I remember
me.
In the cage. We got you in the cage.
Yeah, yeah, and beat the crap out of you. Yeah.
Letting you breathe.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell? Yeah, and I was going to Cody, be careful. They were double suplexing me or some damn thing. And, you know, at 106 years old, just give it to him again.
I think what happened, you know, I can't speak for Ted. I can say that they gave us the ball for the legacy.
I know.
And the whole, they gave us the ball when we were incredibly young. I was 21, turning 22 when I first teamed up with Teddy. And the next thing you know, we're wrestling, we're competing against Batista and Triple H. And I feel like we did.
And having good matches, too.
Oh.
Having really good matches.
Some of the most informative matches of my career are the you know, handicap style matches we had with Triple H over in the UK, where to be able to wrestle against, also to be able to wrestle against him and the Undertaker 10 nights in a row when you're 22 years old.
Yeah.
And your mouth is shut and your ears are open. But all the same, I think one of the issues was we probably were not ready for any of that, because when it came kind of like nut cutting time, though, like Shawn Michaels asked me, he's like, well, what are you going to do? You know, what's going to lead into that? And what things are you going to be known for in the ring? And up until that point in my career, I'd really just kind of listened. And I remember that was, Shawn told me that one of his big things is that getting over is a full-time job. And it was at that point, right at the end, where we were splitting up, which Arn Anderson was adamantly against splitting us up. He wanted to keep me and Teddy together for another year, another 2 years. And as often I find out with Arn was right. We would have been able to learn and grow together as professional wrestlers, as technicians, because I didn't have a clue. I always tell people I'm not really classically trained. I really learned as we went. I did not have a clue of holds, maneuvers, all this stuff that today, like, wrestling is the best of the best. Guys like Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens and Cesaro, there's a sporting element to what they do, and I didn't know it at that point early on. So looking back, we probably should have stayed together.
Yeah.
Hey, well, Cody, I've got a question about last year. You know, you were in a feud with Goldust, you know, Stardust and Goldust, and everybody kind of thought that was heading towards WrestleMania, and then at Fastlane, it was done. Was the plan to end at Fastlane, or did fans just make that up on their own, that it was going to hopefully be a WrestleMania match, or what happened there?
It was never intended to be a WrestleMania match. Fastlane was it. I was in the ladder match in San Jose,
right,
for the Intercontinental Championship. I had been informed as such. No, it was never meant to be beyond Fastlane. You say it was done. The way I look at it, Fastlane was a total dud.
Yeah.
It was a total dud, and people think, oh, well, the finish got screwed up. The finish didn't get screwed up. The match just sucked. And it's just one of those nights where I kick myself to this day about it. I wish it had connected further, because on the live events, Dustin and I were having this really fun, and the crowds were really involved with it. Tremendous interaction. It just didn't work at Fastlane. It might have been too soon. Maybe it should have gone to WrestleMania. I don't particularly think so. And the other thing is, we involved Dad.
Right.
And we involved them in a way that was not believable. When we had involved him prior for Battleground, you could see the love. You could see the family. I always think of Dusty as Anthony Hopkins in Legends of the Fall at that Battleground match.
Yeah.
It was like his last stand. And he was so proud of when he gave the elbow to Dean Ambrose that the people got up. And at that point in the match, I could tell, like, oh, wow, we did something here. And then to bring him back for the, oh, we don't like Dad, or in my case, I don't like Dad, and some of the stuff like, you're dead to me and all that. It's one of those things that I felt the viewer knew, and Dusty has been my best friend.
He was like, I am so lucky to have him as a dad. He was my coach, my best friend, my mentor, everything. So it just, I don't know. It just didn't click. But it never was meant to be at WrestleMania, I can tell you that.
Well, let me just say this to you in closing. As a guy that I've been the Black Scorpion, I've been committed to the mental institution, the Florida State. I mean, there's nothing.
Buried in the desert.
I've been buried in the desert. There isn't too much that I haven't done. But I want to tell you something. It takes an incredible amount of talent to do the gimmick that you were doing and that Dustin does. I mean, one of my favorite things years ago was when Dustin had the Tourette gimmick. I mean, you jumped right into that gimmick. Maybe you weren't happy with it, but you pulled it off.
And
you did. And it was, you know, if you're looking at it in terms of, boy, this guy's got a lot of talent, do you like it for him personally? Did I like it for you personally? No. But you pulled it off, and it was entertaining. And you could see by the fact that you were on TV every week that the people enjoyed it and the company enjoyed it. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't think many people know this. The goal with Stardust was, you said it, like that is Dustin's character. Goldust is Dustin's character. So to be like a light version of him was probably a career nightmare and dream and just terrible idea, perhaps. But the idea was when we got it, okay, it doesn't have to be androgynous. It doesn't have to be Goldust. You can be a supervillain. And, I'll be like Jim Carrey and the Riddler, and I'll find myself a superhero. And then I, you know, had the match with Stephen Amell, who's on TV as a DC. He's the damn Green Arrow as an actual superhero. So I was like, this is perfect. And then there was supposed to be another match, and we had practices scheduled, and we were going to be at Hell in a Cell. And that match was supposed to be the end of Stardust. It was supposed to be, if Stardust loses to the Green Arrow, he'll return as Cody Rhodes. And when that didn't happen, that was one of the first kind of kicking the balls for me, because you said something to me on the bus, and I don't know if you remember it, but you mentioned that I'm not going to say it because you said it to me, but basically in summation said that I'd outgrown the character.
I told you you had. Yeah, you have.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll take credit for saying that.
And I thought, well, there's kind of no end in sight, and I don't want a fan, you know, if somebody says, oh, that's Cody Rhodes, and they say, who? Because they know me as Stardust, it would just break my heart. So it was, you know, part of my decision to peace out there at the end. But I do appreciate Conrad, especially. I appreciate every time I was in it, I wanted to give it 200%, because when you're in it and you're out there, no matter if you love it or hate it, you know, talking about the Black Scorpion and all that, there's still people sitting and they paid, time to deliver.
You know, one of the things I just realized as you were talking about that is the Stardust gimmick, is that kind of like your version of the polka dots? Because your dad got that over when nobody thought, you know, it had any business getting over. And then you got this Stardust thing over, which really, I mean, golly, you exceeded all expectations with that. It was a lot better than it had any business being. And a lot of that was because of you. Yeah.
I think somebody said, hey, good job on dancing through your polka dots to me on social media the other day. And I thought, that's a cool thing to say. It was definitely, Fit Finley brought it up to me a couple times. It was definitely a chance to be something other than just a clean cut, you know, arrogant legacy, or even like a clean cut white meat baby face. It was definitely a chance to be something different. I was looking forward to showing, now that I've taken it off, the layers and the depth that it added to me. I learned a lot from the first year of Stardust, a lot, and I always like Fit telling me that.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to entertain the world today, along with Conrad and myself. We had a ball.
Thank you so much.
The legend, Conrad. Thank you, guys.
Listen, you don't realize that his place in Alabama is referred to as the
Conradison. Let's just stick with that.
It's the Conradison, but to a lot of people around this part of the country, it's the Mustang Ranch of the Southeast.
Wow.
I do realize that because you told me on the bus, Conrad, he sings your praises. He sings your praises, man.
I told him.
You guys are good.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for joining the show, man. We really appreciate you taking the time.
And my best to Brandy and your mom and the whole family, buddy, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
As your dad would say, don't be afraid to live the legend, man.
living on the edge of a lightning bolt.
That's it, buddy. Love you, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Love you, too.